one of them, the embalmed pharaoh. "Watch out," Bill said. Luce hadn't even realized she was resting her hands on a small wooden chest. "That contains the pharaoh's entrails." Luce jerked away and slid the starshot out from her dress. When she picked it up, its shaft warmed her fingers. "Is this really going to work?"
"If you pay attention and do as I say," Bill said. "Now, the soul resides directly in the center of your being. To reach it, you must draw the blade precisely down the middle of your chest, right at the critical moment, right when Daniel kisses you and you feel yourself start to cook. Then you, Lucinda Price, will be flung out of your past self, as usual, but your cursed soul will be trapped in Layla's body, where it will burn up and be gone."
I'm afraid.
"Don't be. It's like having your appendix out. You're better off without it."
Bill looked at his empty gray wrist.
"By my watch, Don will be here any moment."
Luce held the silver arrow so that his blade pointed at her breast. The swirling, etched designs tingled under her fingers. Her hands quaked with nerves.
"Steady now."
Bill's earnest call sounded far away. Luce was trying to pay attention, but her heart was pounding in her ears. She had to do this. She had to. For Daniel. To free him from a punishment he'd taken on, only because of her.
"You'll have to do it a lot faster than that during the real thing, or Daniel will surely stop you. One quick slit on your soul. You will feel something loosen, a breath of coldness, and then... bam!"
"Layla!"
Don bounded into her sight. The door behind her was still bolted. Where had he come from? The starshot tumbled from her hands and clattered to the floor. She snatched it up and slipped it back inside her dress. Bill was gone. But Don was... Daniel was right where she wanted him to be.
"What are you doing here?"
Her voice broke with the force of having to act surprised to see him. He didn't seem to hear it. He rushed toward her and wrapped her in his arms.
"Saving your life."
"How did you get in?"
"Don't worry about that. No mortal man, no slab of stone can obstruct a love as true as ours. I will always find you."
In his bare, bronzed arms, it was Luce's instinct to feel comforted. But she couldn't right then. Her heart felt ragged and cold. This easy happiness, these feelings of complete trust, every one of the lovely emotions Daniel had shown her how to feel in every life, they were torture to her now.
"Fear not," he whispered. "Let me tell you, love, what happens after this life. You come back. You rise again. Your rebirth is beautiful and real. You come back to me again and again."
The light from the lamp flickered and made his violet eyes sparkle. His body was so warm against hers.
"But I die again and again."
"What?"
He tilted his head. Even when his physique looked exotic to her, she knew his expression so well, that bemused adoration when she expressed something he hadn't expected her to understand.
"How do you..." "Never mind. It doesn't matter. What matters is that we will again be together. We will always find each other, always love each other, no matter what. I will never leave you."
Luce fell to her knees on the stone steps. She hid her face in her hands.
"I don't know how you can stand it. Over and over again, the same sadness."
He lifted her up.
"The same ecstasy."
"The same fire that kills everything."
"The same passion that ignites it all again. You don't know. You can't remember how wonderful."
"I've seen it. I do know."
Now she had his attention. He didn't seem sure whether or not to believe her, but at least he was listening.
"What if there's no hope of anything ever changing?" she asked.
"There is only hope. One day, you will live through it. That absolute truth is the only thing that keeps me going. I will never give up on you, even if it takes forever."
He wiped away her tears with his thumb.
"I'll love you with all my heart, in every life, through every death. I will not be bound by anything but my love for you."
"But it's so hard. Isn't it hard for you? Haven't you ever thought, what if..." One day our love will conquer this dark cycle. That's worth everything to me.
Luce looked up and saw the love glowing in his eyes. He believed what he was saying. He didn't care if he suffered again and again. He'd forge on, losing her over and over, buoyed by the hope that one day this wouldn't be their end. He knew it was doomed, but he tried over and over again anyway, and he always would. His commitment to her, to them, touched a part of her that she'd thought she'd given up on. She still wanted to argue. This Daniel didn't know the challenges coming their way, the tears they would shed over the ages. He didn't know that she'd seen him in his moments of deepest desperation, what the pain of her deaths would do to him. But then, Luce knew, and that made all the difference in the world. Daniel's lowest moments had terrified her, but things had changed. All along, she'd felt bound to their love, but now she knew how to protect it. Now she had seen their love from so many different angles. She understood it in a way she'd never thought she would. If Daniel ever faltered, she could raise him up. She had learned how to do it from the best, from Daniel. Here she was, about to kill her soul, about to take away their love permanently, and 5 minutes alone with him brought her back to life. Some people spent their entire lives looking for love like this. Luce had had it all along. The future held no starshot for her, only Daniel. Her Daniel, the one she'd left in her parents' backyard in Thunderbolt. She had to go.
"Kiss me," she whispered.
He was seated on the steps with his knees parted, just enough to let her body slide between them. She sank to her knees and faced him. Their foreheads were touching, the tips of their noses. Daniel took her hands. He seemed to want to tell her something, but he could not find the words.
"Please," she begged, her lips edging toward his. "Kiss me and set me free."
Daniel lunged for her, swooping her up and laying her sideways across his lap to cradle her in his arms. His lips found hers. They were as sweet as nectar. She moaned as a deep current of joy flowed through her, every inch of her. Layla's death was near, she knew that, but she never felt safer or more alive than she did when Daniel held her. Her hands locked around the back of his neck, feeling the firm sinews of his shoulders, feeling the tiny raised scars protecting his wings. His hands roved up her back, through her long, thick hair. Every touch was rapture, every kiss so wonderful and pure, it left her dizzy.
"Stay with me," he pleaded.
The muscles in his face had grown tense, and his kisses had become hungrier, more desperate. He must have sensed Luce's body warming. The heat rising in her core, spreading through her chest and flushing her cheeks. Tears filled her eyes. She kissed him harder. She'd been through this so many times before, but for some reason this felt different. With a loud whoosh, he stretched his wings out and then deftly wrapped them tight around her, a cradle of soft white holding the two of them fast.
"You really believe it?" she whispered. "That someday I'll live through this?"
"With all my heart and soul," he said,
cupping her face in his hands, pulling his wings tighter around them both.
"I will wait for you as long as it takes. I will love you every moment across time."
By then, Luce was broiling hot. She cried out from the pain, thrashing in Daniel's arms as the heat overwhelmed her. She was burning his skin, but he never let her go. The moment had come. The star shot was tucked inside her dress, and this, right now, was when she would have used it. But she was never going to give up. Not on Daniel. Not when she knew, no matter how hard it got, that he would never give up on her. Her skin began to blister. The heat was so brutal, she could do nothing but shiver. And then she could only scream. Layla combusted, and as the flames engulfed her body, Luce felt her own body and the soul they were sharing untwine, seeking the fastest escape from the unforgiving heat. The column of fire grew taller and wider until it filled the room and the world, until it was everything, and Layla was nothing at all. Luce expected darkness and found light. Where was the announcer? Could she still be inside Layla? The fire blazed on. It did not extinguish.
It spread. The flames consumed more and more of the darkness, reaching into the sky, as if the great night itself were flammable, until the hot blaze of red and gold was all that Luce could see. Every other time one of her past selves had died, Luce's release from the flames and into the announcer had been simultaneous. Something was different, something that was making her see things that couldn't possibly be real. Wings on fire. "Daniel!" she cried out. What looked like Daniel's wings soared through waves of flames, catching fire but not smoldering, as if they were made of fire. All she could make out were white wings and violet eyes. "Daniel?" The fire rolled across the darkness like a giant wave across an ocean. It crashed onto an invisible shore and washed furiously over Luce, rushing up her body, over her head, and far behind her. Then, as if someone had pinched out a candle, there was a quick hiss, and everything went black. A cold wind crept up behind her. Goosebumps spread across her skin. She hugged her body closer, drawing up her knees, and realizing, with a jolt of surprise, that no ground held up her feet. She wasn't flying, exactly, just hovering, directionless. This darkness was not an announcer. She'd not used the starshot, but had she somehow died? She was afraid. She didn't know where she was, only that she was alone. No, there was someone else. A scraping sound. A dim gray light. "Bill!" Luce shouted at the sight of him, so relieved she began to laugh. "Oh, thank God. I thought I was lost. I thought... Oh, never mind." She took a deep breath. "I couldn't do it. I couldn't kill my soul. I'll find another way to break the curse. Daniel and I, we won't give up on each other." Bill was far away, but floating toward her, making loops in the air. The nearer he got, the larger he appeared, swelling until he was 2, then 3, then 10 times the size of the small stone gargoyle she'd traveled with. Then the real metamorphosis began. Behind his shoulders, a pair of thicker, fuller, jet-black wings burst forth, shattering his familiar small stone wings into a chaos of broken bits. The wrinkles on his forehead deepened and expanded across his entire body until he looked horrifically shriveled and old. The claws on his feet and hands grew longer, sharper, yellower. They glinted in the darkness, razor sharp. His chest swelled, sprouting thick, curly black hairs as he grew infinitely larger than he had been before. Luce strained to suppress the wail climbing in her throat. And she managed, right up until Bill's stony gray eyes, their irises dulled beneath layers of cataracts, glowed as red as fire. Then she screamed.
"You always did make the wrong choice."
Bill's voice had turned monstrous, deep and phlegm-filled and grating, not just on Luce's ears, but on her very soul. His breath punched her, reeking of death.
"You're..."
Luce could not finish her sentence. There was only one word for the evil creature before her, and the idea of saying it aloud was frightening.
"The bad guy,"
Bill cackled.
"Surprise!"
He held out the I sound of the word so long that Luce was sure he would double over and cough, but he didn't.
"But you taught me so much. You helped me figure out... Why would you... How... The whole time?"
"I was deceiving you. It's what I do, Lucinda."
She had cared for Bill, roguish and disgusting as he was. She'd confided in him, listened to him, had almost killed her soul because he'd told her to. The thought cut her. She'd almost lost Daniel because of Bill. She might lose Daniel still because of Bill. But he wasn't Bill. He was no mere demon, not like Stephen or even Cam at his worst. He was evil incarnate. And he had been with Luce, breathing down her neck, the whole time. She tried to turn away from him, but his darkness was everywhere. It looked as if she were floating in a night sky, but all the stars were impossibly far away. There was no sign of Earth. Close by were patches of darker blackness, swirling abysses, and every now and then a shaft of light appeared, a beacon of hope, illumination. Then the light would vanish.
"Where are we?" she asked.
Satan sneered at the pointlessness of her question.
"Never wear," he said.
His voice no longer had the familiar tone of her traveling companion.
"The dark heart of nothing at the center of everything. Neither heaven, nor earth, nor hell. A place of the darkest transits. Nothing your mind at this stage can fathom, so it probably just looks."
His red eyes bulged.
"Scary to you."
"What about those flashes of light?" Luce asked, trying not to let on just how frightening the place did look to her. She'd seen at least 4 flashes of light already, brilliant conflagrations igniting out of nowhere, vanishing fast into darker regions in the sky.
"Oh, those."
Bill watched one as it blazed and disappeared over Luce's shoulder.
"Angel travel, demon travel. Busy night, isn't it? Everyone seems to be going somewhere."
"Yes." Luce had been waiting for another burst of light in the sky. When it came, it cast a shadow across her, and she clawed at it, desperate to shake out an announcer before the light disappeared.
"Including me."
The announcer expanded rapidly in her hands, so heavy and urgent and lithe that, for a moment, she thought she might make it. Instead, she felt a scabrous grip around her sides. Bill had her entire body nestled in his grimy claw.
"I'm just not ready to say goodbye yet," he whispered in a voice that made her shiver. "See, I've grown so fond of you. No, wait, that's not it. I've always been fond of you."
Luce let the shadow in her fingers wisp away into nothing.
"And like all beloveds, I need you in my presence, especially now, so you don't corrupt my designs. Again."
"At least now you've given me a goal," Luce said, straining against his grasp. It was no use. He gripped her tighter, squeezing her bones.
"You always did have an inner fire. I love that about you."
He smiled, and it was a terrible thing.
"If only your spark stayed inside, Some people are just unlucky in love."
"Don't talk to me about love," Luce spat. "I can't believe I ever listened to a word that came out of your mouth. You don't know a thing about love."
"I've heard that one before. And I happen to know one important thing about love. You think yours is bigger than heaven and hell and the fate of all that rests between. But you're wrong. Your love for Daniel Grigori is less than insignificant. It is nothing."
His shout was like a shockwave that blew back Luce's hair. She gasped and struggled for air.
"Say whatever you want. I love Daniel. I always will. And it has nothing to do with you."
Satan held her up to his red eyes, pinching her skin with his sharpest pointer claw.
"I know you love him. You're a fool for him. Just tell me why."
"Why?"
"Why? Why him? Put it into words. Really make me feel it. I want to be moved."
"A million reasons. I just do."
His snaggletooth smile deepened, and a sound like 1,000 growling dogs came from deep inside him.
"That was a test. You failed, but it isn't your fault. Not really. That is an unfortunate side effect of the curse you bear. You don't get to make choices anymore."
"That's not true. If you remember, I just made a big choice not to kill my soul."
That angered him. She could see it in the way his nostrils flared, the way he reached up and balled his claw into a fist and made a patch of the starry sky go out, like a light switch had been flicked somewhere. But he said nothing for the longest time, just stared away into the night. A horrible thought struck Luce.
"Were you even telling the truth? What would really have happened if I'd used the star shot to..."
She shuddered, sickened that she'd come so close.
"What's in all this for you? You want me out of the picture or something so you can get to Daniel? Is that why you would never show yourself in front of him? Because he would have gone after you and..."
Satan chuckled. His laughter dimmed the stars.
"You think I'm scared of Daniel Grigori? You do think very highly of him. Tell me, what kind of wild lies has he been filling your head with about his grandiose place in heaven?"
You're the liar, Lou said. You've done nothing but lie from the moment I met you. No wonder the whole universe despises you.
Fears, not despises. There's a difference. Fear has envy in it somewhere. You may not believe it, but there are many who wish to wield the power that I wield, who adore me.
You're right. I don't believe you.
You just don't know enough about anything. I've taken you on a tour of your past, shown you the futility of this existence, hoping to awaken you to the truth, and all I get from you is, Daniel, I want Daniel.
He flung her down, and she fell into blackness, coming to a stop only when he glared at her, as if he could fix her in place. He moved in a tight circle around her, his hands behind his back, his wings drawn tight, his head tilted toward the sky.
Everything you see here is everything there is to see. From far away, yes, but it's all there, all the lives and worlds and more, far beyond the weak conception of mortals. Look at it.
She did, and it looked different than it had before. The felt of stars was endless, the dark of night folded again and again over so many bright spots that the sky was more light than dark. It's beautiful.
It's about to be a tabula rasa.
His lips curled into a twisted smile.
I've grown tired of this game.
This is all a game to you?
It's a game to him.
He swept his hand across the sky and left a dark swath of night in his wake.
And I refuse to concede it to that other simply because of a cosmic scale, simply because our sides are in balance.
Balance? You mean the scale between the fallen angels who allied themselves with you and those who allied themselves with...
Don't say it! But yes, that other. Right now there is a balance and...
And one more angel has to side, Lou said, remembering the long talk Arian had given her at the diner in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm. Except this time, I won't leave it to chance. It was a short-sighted goal of mine, the whole starshot bit, but I've seen the error of my ways. I've been plotting. I've been planning. Often while you and some past iteration of Grigori were preoccupied with your B-grade heavy petting. So, you see, no one will be able to sabotage what I have planned next. I am going to wipe the slate clean. Start over. I can skip the millennia that led up to you and your loophole of a life, Lucinda Price,
he snorted,
and begin again. And this time, I will play more wisely. This time, I will win.
What does that mean, wipe the slate clean?
All of time is like a grand slate, Lucinda. Nothing is written that can't be erased by one clever sort. It's a drastic move, yes, and it means that I'll be throwing away thousands of years. A big setback for everyone concerned. But hey, what's a handful of lost millennia in the yawning concept of eternity?
How can you do that? She said, knowing he could feel her tremble in his grasp. What does it mean?
It means I'm going back to the beginning, to the fall, to all of us being cast out of heaven because we dared to exercise free will. I'm talking about the first great injustice.
Reliving your greatest hits, she said, but he wasn't listening, lost in the details of his scheme.
You and the tiresome Daniel Grigori will make the trip with me. In fact, your soulmate is on his way there now.
Why would Daniel...
I showed him the way, of course. Now, all I have to do is get there in time to see the angels cast out and begin their fall to Earth. What a beautiful moment that will be.
When they begin their fall, how long did it take?
9 days, by some accounts, he murmured. But it seemed an eternity to those of us cast out. You never asked your friends about it. Cam, Roland, Arian, your precious Daniel. All of us were there.
So you see it happen again. So what?
So then I do something unexpected. And you know what that is?
He snickered, and his round eyes gleamed. I don't know, she said softly.
Kill Daniel?
Not kill. Catch. I'm going to catch every last one of us. I'll open up an announcer like a great net, casting it to the forward edge of time. Then I'll cleave to my old self and spirit the full host of angels into the present with me, even the ugly ones.
So what?
So what? We will be once more starting at the beginning, because the fall is the beginning. It isn't a part of history. It is when history begins, and all that has come before, it will no longer have happened.
No longer have hap... You mean like that life in Egypt?
Never happened.
China? Versailles? Las Vegas?
Never, never, never. But it's more than just you and your boyfriend, selfish child. It's the Roman Empire and the so-called son of that other. It is the long, sad festering of humanity, rising from the primordial murk of the earth and turning its world into a cesspool. It is everything that has ever taken place, taken away by a tiny little skip across time, like a stone skipping across water.
But you can't just erase all of the past.
Sure I can, like shortening a skirt's waistband. Just remove the excess fabric and draw the two parts together, and it's like that middle part never existed. We start fresh. The whole cycle will repeat itself, and I'll have another shot at luring in the important souls. Souls like...
You will never get him. He will never join your side. Daniel hadn't given in once across the 5,000 years she'd witnessed. No matter that they killed her again and again and denied him his one true love, he would not give in and choose a side. And even if he did somehow lose his resolve, she would be there to support him. She knew now that she was strong enough to carry Daniel if he faltered, just as he'd carried her. "No matter how many times you wipe the slate clean," she said, "it won't change a thing."
"Oh!"
He laughed, as if he were embarrassed for Luce, a thick, scary guffaw.
"Of course it will. It will change everything. Shall I count the ways?"
He stuck out a spiky, yellowed claw.
"First of all, Daniel and Cam will be brothers again, just as they were in the early days after the fall. Won't that be fun for you? Worse still, no Nephilim. No time will have passed for angels to walk the earth and copulate with the mortals, so say goodbye to your little friends from school."
"No," he snapped his claws.
"Oh, one more thing I forgot to mention. Your history with Daniel? That gets erased. So everything you've discovered on your little quest, all those things you so earnestly told me you'd learned in between our jaunts in the past, you can kiss them goodbye."
"No, you can't do this." He swept her into his cold grasp once more.
"Oh, darling, it's practically done."
He cackled, and his laughter sounded like an avalanche as time and space folded around the two of them. Luce shuddered and cringed and fought to loosen his grip, but he had her tucked too tightly, too deeply under his vile wing. She could see nothing, could only feel a rush of wind rip into them and a burst of heat, and then an unshakable chill settling over her soul. Settling over her soul. 20. Journey's End. Heaven's Gate, the Fall. Of course, there had only ever been one place to find her. The first one, the beginning. Daniel tumbled toward the first life, ready to wait there for as long as it would take Luce to make her way there too. He would take her in his arms, whisper in her ear, "At last, I found you. I will never let you go." He stepped from the shadows and froze in blinding brightness. No. This was not his destination. This ambrosial air and opalescent sky, this cosmic gulf of adamantine light. His soul constricted at the sight of the waves of white clouds brushing against the black announcer. There it was, in the distance, the unmistakable three-note hum playing softly, endlessly. The music the throne of the ethereal monarch made purely by radiating light.
No, no, no.
He was not supposed to be here. He meant to meet Lucinda in her first incarnation on Earth. How had he landed here, of all places? His wings had instinctively unfurled. The unfolding felt different than it did on Earth. Not the vast release of finally letting himself go, but an occurrence as commonplace as breathing was to mortals. He knew that he was glowing, but not in the way he sometimes shone under mortal moonlight. His glory was nothing to hide here, and nothing to show, either. It just was. It had been so long since Daniel had been home. It drew him in. It drew them all in, the way the scent of a childhood home, pine trees or homemade cookies, sweet summer rain, or the musk of a father's cigar, could do for any mortal. It held a mighty power. This was why Daniel had stayed away these last 6,000 years. He was back now, and not of his own volition. That cherub, the pale, wispy angel in his announcer, he had tricked Daniel. The pinions of Daniel's wings stood on end. There had been something not quite right about that angel. His scale brand was too fresh, still raised and red on the back of his neck, as if it had been freshly carved. Daniel had flown into some sort of trap. He had to leave, no matter what. Aloft. You were always aloft up here, always gliding through the purest air. He spread his wings and felt the white mist ripple over him. He soared across the pearly forest, swooping over the orchard of knowledge, curving around the grove of life. He passed satin-white lakes and the foothills of the shining silver Celeste Mountains. He'd spent so many happy epochs here. No. All that must remain in the recesses of his soul. This was no time for nostalgia. He slowed and approached the meadow of the throne. It was just as he remembered it, the flat plain of brilliant white cloud soil leading up toward the center of everything. The throne itself, dazzlingly bright, radiating the warmth of pure goodness, so luminous that, even for an angel, it was impossible to look directly at it. One could not even get close to seeing the Creator, who sat upon the throne clothed in brightness, so the customary synecdoche, calling the whole entity the throne, was apt. Daniel's gaze drifted to the arc of rippled silver ledges circling the throne. Each one was marked with the rank of a different archangel. This used to be their headquarters, a place to worship, to attend, to call on and deliver messages for the throne. There was the lustrous altar that had been his seat, near the top right corner of the throne. It had been there for as long as the throne had been in existence. But there were only 7 altars now. Once there had been 8. Wait. Daniel winced. He knew he'd come through the gates of heaven, but he hadn't thought about precisely when. It mattered. The throne had only been imbalanced like that for a very short period, the sliver of time right after Lucifer stated his plans to defect, but before the rest of them had been called upon to choose sides. He arrived in that blink of a moment after Lucifer's betrayal, but before the fall. The great rift was coming, during which some would side with heaven and some would side with hell, when Lucifer would turn into Satan before their eyes, and the great arm of the throne would sweep legions of them off the surface of heaven and send them plummeting. He drew nearer to the meadow. The harmonious note grew louder, as did the choral buzz of angels. The meadow was glowing with the gathering of all the brightest souls. His past self would be down there. All of them were. It was so bright Daniel couldn't see clearly, but his memory told him that Lucifer had been permitted to hold court from his repositioned silver altar at the far end of the meadow, in direct opposition to, though not nearly as high as, the throne. The other angels were assembled before the throne, in the middle of the meadow. This was the roll call, the last moment of unity, before heaven lost half its souls. At the time, Daniel had wondered why the throne ever permitted the roll call to occur. Did he, who had dominion over everything, think Lucifer's appeal to the angels would end in sheer humiliation? How could the throne have been so wrong? Gabby still spoke of the roll call with startling clarity. Daniel could remember little of it, other than the soft brush of a single wing reaching out to him in solidarity. The brush that told him, "You were not alone." Could he dare to look upon that wing now?
Perhaps there was a way to go about the roll call differently, so that the curse that befell them afterward did not strike so hard. With a shiver that reached his very core, Daniel realized that he could turn this trap into an opportunity. Of course. Someone had reworked the curse so that there was a way out for Lucinda. The whole time he'd been racing after her, Daniel had assumed it must have been Lucinda herself. That somewhere, in her heedless flight backward through time, she'd opened up a loophole. But maybe, maybe it had been Daniel all along. He was here now. He could do it. In some sense, he must already have done it. Yes, he'd been chasing its implications through the millennia he'd traveled to get here. What he did here, now, at the very beginning, would ripple forward into every one of her lives. Finally, things were beginning to make sense. He would be the one to soften the curse, to allow Lucinda to live and travel into her past. It had to have begun here, and it had to have begun with Daniel. He descended to the plain of cloud soil, edging along the glowing border. There were hundreds of angels there, thousands, filling it up with lustrous anxiety. The light was astonishing as he slipped in among the crowd. No one perceived his anachronism. The tension and fear among the angels were too bright.
"The time has come, Lucifer," his voice called from the throne.
This voice had given Daniel immortality and all that came with it.
"This is truly what you desire."
"Not just for us, but for our fellow angels," Lucifer was saying. "Free will is deserved by everyone, not just the mortal men and women whom we watch from above."
Lucifer appealed now to the angels, burning brighter than the morning star.
"The line has been drawn in the cloud soil of the meadow. Now you are all free to choose."
The first heavenly scribe stood at the base of the throne, in shimmery incandescence, and began to call out the names. It started with the lowest-ranking angel, the 7,812th son of heaven.
"Galil," the scribe called, "last of the 28 angels who govern the mansions of the moon."
That was how it began. The scribe kept a running tally in the opalescent sky as Shabril, the angel of the second hour of the night, chose Lucifer, and Teal, the angel of the north wind, chose heaven, along with Padil, one of the guardians of childbeds, and Gadal, an angel involved with magical rites for the ill. Some of the angels made lengthy appeals, some of them scarcely said a word. Daniel kept little track of the tally. He was on a quest to find himself, and besides, he already knew how this ended. He waded through the field of angels, grateful for the time it took to call out all the choices. He had to recognize his own self before he rose up out of the masses and said the naive words he'd been paying for ever since. There was commotion in the meadow, whispering and flashing lights, a grumble of low thunder. Daniel hadn't heard the name called, had not seen the angel float up to declare his choice. He shoved through the souls in front of him to get a better view. Roland. He bowed before the throne.
"With respect, I'm not ready to choose."
He looked at the throne, but gestured at Lucifer.
"You are losing a son today, and all of us are losing a brother. Many more, it seems, will follow. Please, do not enter lightly into this dark decision. Do not force our family to splinter apart."
Daniel teared up at the sight of Roland's soul, the angel of poetry and music, Daniel's brother and his friend, pleading in the white sky.
"You are wrong, Roland," the throne boomed. "And in defying me, you have made your choice. Welcome him to your side, Lucifer."
"No,"
Arian shrieked, and flew up out of the center of brightness to hover beside Roland.
"Please, only give him time to understand what his decision means."
"The decision has been made," was all the throne said in reply. "I can tell what is in his soul, despite his words. He is already chosen."
A soul brushed up against Daniel's, hot and stunning, instantly recognizable. Cam.
"What are you?" Cam whispered.
He sensed innately that something was different about Daniel, but there was no way to explain who Daniel really was to an angel who'd never left heaven, who had no conception of what was to come.
Brother, do not fret, Daniel pleaded. It is me.
Cam grasped his arm.
I perceive that, though I see you're also not you.
He grimly shook his head.
I trust you are here for a reason. Please, can you stop this from happening?
Daniel! The scribe was calling his name. Angel of the Silent Watchers, the Grigori.
No, not yet. He had not worked out what to say, what to do. Daniel tore through the blinding light of souls around him, but it was too late. His earlier self rose slowly, gazing neither at the throne nor at Lucifer.
Instead, he was looking into the hazy distance, looking, Daniel remembered, at her.
With respect, I will not do this. I will not choose Lucifer's side, and I will not choose the side of heaven.
A roar went up from the camps of angels, from Lucifer, and from the throne.
Instead, I choose love, the thing you have all forgotten. I choose love and leave you to your war. You're wrong to bring this upon us, Daniel said evenly to Lucifer.
Then, turning, he addressed the throne.
All that is good in heaven and on earth is born of love. This war is not just. This war is not good. Love is the only thing worth fighting for. My child, the rich, steady voice boomed from the throne. You misunderstand. I am standing firm on my ruling out of love. Love for all my creations.
No, Daniel said softly.
This war is about pride. Cast me out, if you must. If that is my destiny, I surrender to it, but not to you.
Lucifer's laughter was a foul belch.
You've got the courage of a god, but the mind of a mortal adolescent, and your punishment shall be that of an adolescent.
Lucifer swept his hand to one side.
Hell will not have him. And he has already made plain his choice to forsake heaven,
came the disappointed voice from the throne.
As with all my children, I see what is in your soul. But I do not know now what will become of you, Daniel, nor your love.
He will not have his love, Lucifer shouted.
Then you have something to propose, Lucifer, asked the throne.
An example must be made, Lucifer seethed.
Can you not see? The love he speaks of is destructive.
Lucifer grinned as the seeds of his most evil act began to sprout.
So let it destroy the lovers and not the rest of us. She will die.
Gasps from the angels. It was impossible, the very last thing anyone expected.
She will die always and forevermore,
Lucifer continued, his voice thick with venom.
She will never pass out of adolescence, will die again and again and again at precisely the moment when she remembers your choice, so that you will never truly be together. That will be her punishment. And as for you, Daniel... That is sufficient, the throne said. Should Daniel choose to stand by his decision, what you propose, Lucifer, will be punishment enough.
There was a long, strained pause.
Understand, I do not wish this upon any of my children, but Lucifer is right. An example must be made.
This was the moment when it had to happen, Daniel's chance to open a loophole in the curse. Boldly, he flew upward in the meadow to hover side by side with his earlier self. Now was the time to change things, to alter the past.
What is this twinning?
Lucifer seethed. His newly red eyes narrowed at the two Daniels. The host of angels below Daniel flickered in confusion. His earlier self looked on in wonder.
Why are you here? He whispered.
Daniel did not wait for anyone to question him further, did not even wait for Lucifer to sit down, or for the throne to recover from this surprise.
I have come from our future, from millennia of your punishment.
The sudden bewilderment of the angels was palpable in the heat sent out of their souls. Of course, this was beyond anything any of them could fathom. Daniel could not see the throne clearly enough to tell what effect his return had on him, but Lucifer's soul glowed red-hot with rage. Daniel forced himself to go on.
I come here to beg clemency. If we must be punished, and my master, I do not question your decision. Please, at least remember that one of the great features of your power is your mercy, which is mysterious and large and humbles us all.
Mercy? Lucifer cried. After the size of your betrayals? And does your future self regret his choice?
Daniel shook his head.
My soul is old, but my heart is young, he said, looking at his earlier self, who seemed stunned.
Then he gazed at his beloved soul, beautiful and burning bright.
I cannot be other than what I am, and I am the choices of all my days. I stand by them. The choice is made, the Daniel said in unison. Then we stand by the punishment meted out, the throne boomed.
The great light shuddered, and in the long moment of utter silence, Daniel wondered whether he'd been right to come forward at all. Then, at last,
But we will grant your request for mercy.
No, Lucifer cried. Heaven is not the only party wronged.
Quiet!
The throne's voice grew louder as he spoke. He sounded tired and pained, and less certain than Daniel had ever imagined possible.
If one day her soul comes into being without the weight of sacrament, having chosen a side for her, then she shall be free to grow and choose for herself, to reenact this moment, to escape the ordained punishment. And in so doing, to put the final test to this love that you claim supersedes the rights of heaven and family. Her choice, then, will be your redemption or the final seal on your punishment. That is all that can be done.
Daniel bowed down, and his past self bowed down beside him.
I cannot abide this, Lucifer bellowed. They must never, never.
It is done,
the voice thundered, as if he had reached his capacity for mercy.
I will not tolerate those who would argue with me on this or any other matter. Begone, all of those who have chosen ill or not chosen at all. The gates of heaven are closed to you.
Something flickered. The brightest light of all suddenly went out. Heaven grew dark and deadly cold. The angels gasped and shivered, huddling closer together. Then, silence. No one moved, and no one spoke. What happened next was unimaginable, even to Daniel, who had already witnessed the whole thing once before. The sky beneath them shuddered, and the white lake brimmed over, sending a fiery surge of steamy white water flooding over everything. The orchard of knowledge and the grove of life fell into each other, and all of heaven shook as they shuddered to their deaths. A silver lightning bolt cracked forth from the throne and struck the west end of the meadow. The cloud soil boiled into blackness, and a pit of the darkest despair opened up like a sinkhole right under Lucifer. With all his impotent rage, he and the angels closest to him vanished. As for the angels who had yet to choose, they too lost their purchase on heaven's plains and slid into the abyss. Gabby was one of them, Arian and Cam too, as well as the others dearest to his heart, collateral damage from Daniel's choice. Even his past self, eyes wide, was swept toward the black hole in heaven and vanished within. Once again, Daniel could do nothing to stop it from happening. He knew that a 9-day fugue of tumbling ever downward stood between the fallen and the moment they would reach Earth. 9 days he couldn't afford to spend not finding her. He plunged toward the abyss. At the edge of nothingness, Daniel looked down and saw a spot of brightness, farther away than the farthest thing imaginable. It was not an angel, but a beast with vast black wings darker than the night. And it was flying toward him, moving upward. How? Daniel had just seen Lucifer at the judgment up above. He'd fallen first, and should be far below. Still, it could be no one else. Daniel's vision focused sharply, and his wings burned from shoot to tip, when he realized that the beast was carrying someone tucked under his wing.
Lucinda!
He shouted, but the beast had already dropped her. His whole world stopped. Daniel did not see where Lucifer went after that, because he was diving across the sky toward Luce. The burning of her soul was so bright and so familiar.
He shot forward, his wings clasped close to his body, so that he fell faster than seemed possible, so fast that the world around him blurred. He reached out and... she landed in his arms. Immediately, his wings pulled forward, making a protective shield around her. She seemed startled at first, as if she'd just awakened from a terrible dream, and gazed deeply into his eyes, letting out all the air in her lungs. She touched his cheek, ran her fingers across the tingling ridges of his wings.
"At last,"
he breathed into her, finding her lips.
"You found me," she whispered. "Always."
Just below them, the mass of fallen angels lit up the sky like 1,000 brilliant stars. They all seemed drawn together by the pull of some unseen force, clinging to one another during the long plunge from heaven. It was tragic and awe-inspiring. For a moment, they all seemed to hum and burn with a beautiful perfection. As he and Luce watched, a bolt of black lightning darted across the sky and seemed to encircle the bright mass of the falling. Then, everything but Luce and Daniel grew absolutely dark, as if all of the angels, all at once, had tumbled through a pocket in the sky. Epilogue. No more but this. Savannah, Georgia, November 27, 2009. It was the last announcer Luce wanted to step through for a very long time. When Daniel stretched open the shadow cast by the inexplicable brightening of the stars in that strange, neverwhere sky, Luce did not look back. She held fast to his hand, overcome with relief. She was with Daniel now. Wherever they went would be home.
"Wait,"
he said, before she plunged inside the shadow.
"What is it?"
His lips traced her collarbone. She arched her back and grabbed the back of his neck and pulled him closer. Their teeth clicked, and his tongue found hers, and as long as she could stay there like that, she didn't need to breathe. They left the distant past locked in the kiss, one so long awaited and so passionate it made everything else around Luce go fuzzy. It was a kiss most people dreamed of all their lives. Here was the soul Luce had been searching for ever since she left him in her parents' backyard. And they were still together when Daniel swooped them out of the announcer under the peaceful drifting of a silver cloud. "More," she said, when at last he pulled away. They were so high up, Luce could see little of the ground below. A swath of moonlit ocean, tiny white waves crashing against a darkened shore. Daniel laughed and drew her close again. He couldn't seem to stop smiling. His body felt so good against hers, and his skin looked so spectacular under the light of the stars. The more they kissed, the more certain Luce was she'd never get enough. There was little difference, and yet all the difference in the world, between the Daniels she'd met when she visited her other lifetimes, and the Daniel pressing his lips to hers now. Finally, Luce could return his kiss without doubting herself or their love. She felt unbounded happiness. And to think she had almost given this up. Reality began to set in. She had failed in her quest to break her and Daniel's curse. She had been tricked, deceived, by Satan. Though she hated to stop kissing, Luce held Daniel's warm face in her hands. She gazed into his violet eyes, trying to draw strength. "I'm sorry," she said, "for running off like I did."
"Don't be," he said, slowly and with absolute sincerity. "You had to go. It was preordained. It had to happen."
He smiled again.
"We did what we needed to do, Lucinda."
A jet of warmth shot through her, making her dizzy.
"I was starting to think I'd never see you again." "How many times have I told you that I will always find you?"
Then Daniel turned her around so that her back was pressed against his chest. He kissed the nape of her neck and looped his arms around her torso, their flying position, and they were off. Flying with Daniel was something Luce would never tire of. His white wings extended into the air, beating against the midnight sky as they moved with an unbelievable grace. Moisture from the clouds dotted her forehead and her nose, while Daniel's strong arms stayed wrapped around her, making her feel safer and more secure than she'd felt in a long time.
"Look,"
Daniel said, extending his neck slightly.
The moon.
The orb seemed close enough and large enough for Luce to touch. They whipped through the air, barely making any noise at all. Luce took a deep breath and widened her eyes in surprise. She knew this air. It was the particular briny ocean breeze of coastal Georgia. She was home. Tears stung her eyes as she thought about her mother and father and her dog, Andrew. How long had she been gone from them? What would it be like when she came back? "Are we going to my house?" she asked.
"Sleep first," Daniel said. "You've only been gone a few hours, as far as your parents are concerned. It's nearly midnight there. We'll swing by first thing in the morning, once you're rested."
Daniel was right. She should rest now and see them in the morning. But if he wasn't taking her to her house, where were they going? They neared the tree line. The narrow tops of the pines wobbled in the wind, and the empty sandy shore sparkled as they flew over. They were drawing near a small island not far off the coast. Tybee. She'd been there a dozen times as a kid, and once more recently. A small log cabin with a gabled roof and smoke coming out of its chimney. The red door with a pane of salt-stained glass. The window looking into the small loft. It looked familiar, but Luce was so tired and had been so many places recently that it wasn't until her feet touched down on the soft, silty ground that she recognized the cabin she'd stayed at right after she'd left Sword and Cross. After Daniel had first told her of their past lives together, after the ugly battle in the cemetery, after Miss Sophia had morphed into something evil, and Penn had been killed, and all the angels had told Luce that her life was suddenly in danger, she had slept here, alone, for 3 delirious days.
"We can rest here," Daniel said. "It's a safe haven for the fallen. We have a few dozen of these places scattered around the world."
She should have been thrilled by the prospect of a full night's rest, with Daniel at her side, but something was nagging at her. "I need to tell you something." She faced him on the path. An owl hooted from the pine tree, and the water lapped along the shore, but otherwise the dark island was quiet.
"I know."
"You know?"
"I saw."
Daniel's eyes went stormy gray.
"He tricked you, didn't he?"
"Yes," Luce cried, burning with the shame of it.
"How long was he with you?"
Daniel fidgeted, almost as if he were trying to suppress jealousy. "A long time," Luce winced. "But it gets worse. He's planning something terrible."
"He is always planning something terrible," Daniel muttered.
"No, this was big." She stepped into Daniel's arms and pressed her hands to his chest. "He told me. He said he wanted to wipe the slate clean." Daniel's grip tightened around her waist.
"He said what?"
"I didn't understand everything. He said he was going back to the fall to open up an announcer and take all the angels with him from that moment straight into the present. He said he was going to..."
"Wipe clean the time between. Wipe clean our existence," Daniel said hoarsely.
"Yes."
"No."
He grabbed her hand and pulled her toward the cabin.
"They could be spying on us. Sophia, the outcasts, anyone. Come inside where it's safe. You must tell me everything he said, Luce, everything."
Daniel practically ripped open the red wooden door of the cabin, bolting it behind them. An instant later, before they could do anything else, a pair of arms engulfed both Luce and Daniel in a giant hug.
"You're safe,"
the voice broke with relief. "Cam." Luce turned her head to see the demon dressed all in black, like the uniform they'd worn at Sword and Cross. His massive golden wings were pulled back behind his shoulders. They sent sparkles of light reflecting off the walls. His skin was pale and he looked gaunt. His eyes stood out like emeralds.
"We're back," Daniel said warily, clapping Cam on the shoulder. "I'm not sure I would say safe."
Cam's gaze swept carefully over Luce. Why was he here? Why did Daniel seem happy to see him? Daniel led Luce to the worn wicker rocking chair near the crackling hearth and gestured for her to sit. She collapsed into the chair, and he sat on the arm, resting his hand on her back. The cabin was as she remembered it, warm and dry and smelling like cinnamon. The narrow canvas cot in the corner where she had slept was neatly made. There was the narrow wooden ladder leading up to the small loft that overlooked the main room. The green lamp still hung from a rafter.
"How did you know to come here?" Daniel asked Cam.
"Roland read something in the announcers this morning. He thought you might be coming back, and that something else might be developing."
Cam eyed Daniel.
"Something that affects us all."
"If what Luce says is true, this is not something any of us can take on alone."
Cam tilted his head at Luce.
"I know. The others are on their way. I took the liberty of spreading the word."
Just then, in the loft, a window shattered. Daniel and Cam shot to their feet.
"Just us," Arian's voice sang down. "We've got Nephilim in tow, so we travel with the grace of a college hockey team."
A great burst of light, gold and silver from above, made the walls of the cabin shudder. Luce jumped to her feet, just in time to see Arian, Roland, Gabby, Molly, and Annabelle, the girl Luce had realized in Helston was an angel, slowly floating down from the rafters, all with their wings extended. Together, they were a myriad of colors, black and gold, white and silver. The colors stood for different sides, but here they were, together. A moment later, Shelby and Miles thundered down the wooden ladder. They were still dressed in the clothes, Shelby's green sweater and Miles's jeans and baseball cap, that they'd worn to Thanksgiving dinner, which seemed like an eternity ago. Luce felt like she was dreaming. It was so wonderful to see these familiar faces right now, faces that she truly wondered if she would ever see again. The only people missing were her parents, of course, and Callie, but she would see them soon enough. Starting with Arian, the angels and Nephilim all circled Luce and Daniel in another massive hug. Even Annabelle, whom Luce barely knew. Even Molly. Suddenly, everyone was shouting over everyone else. Annabelle, batting shimmering pink eyelids. "When did you get back? We have so much to catch up on." And Gabby, kissing Luce on the cheek. "I hope you were careful, and I hope you saw what you needed to see." And Arian. "Did you bring us back anything good?" And Shelby, out of breath. "We were searching for you for, like, ever, weren't we, Miles?" And Roland.
"Pretty cool to see you made it home in one piece, kid."
And Daniel, silencing them all with the gravity of his tone.
"Who brought the Nephilim?"
"I did." Molly draped an arm around Shelby and Miles. "You got something to say about it?"
Daniel cast his eyes over Luce's shoreline friends. Before she had a chance to stick up for them, the corners of his lips pulled upward into a smile, and he said,
"Good. We're going to need all the help we can get. Everyone sit down."
"Lucifer can't mean it," Cam said, shaking his head, stunned. "This is just a desperate last resort. He wouldn't. He was probably just trying to get Luce to..."
"He would," Roland said.
They were spread out in a circle near the fire, facing Luce and Daniel on the rocking chair. Gabby had found hot dogs and marshmallows and packets of powdered hot chocolate in the kitchen cupboard, and had set up a little cook station in front of the fire.
"He would rather start again than to lose his pride," Molly added. "Besides, he has nothing to lose by erasing the past."
Miles dropped his hot dog, and the plate clattered on the hardwood floor.
"Wouldn't that mean Shelby and I wouldn't exist anymore? And what about Luce? Where would she be?"
No one answered. Luce felt embarrassingly aware of her non-angelic status. A hot flush spread across the tops of her shoulders.
"How are we still here if time has been rewritten?" Shelby asked.
"Because they haven't finished their fall yet," Daniel said. "When they do, the act is done and can't be stopped."
"So we have," Arian counted under her breath, 9 days.
"Daniel," Gabby looked up at him, "tell us what we can do."
"There is only one thing to do," Daniel said.
All the glowing wings in the cabin pulled toward him in expectation.
"We must draw everyone to the place where the angels first fell."
"Which is where?" Miles asked.
No one spoke for a very long time.
"It's hard to say," Daniel finally answered. "It happened long ago, and we were all new to Earth. But..."
He glanced at Cam.
We do have means of figuring it out.
Cam whistled lowly. Was he afraid? 9 days isn't a lot of time to locate the site of the fall, Gabby said. Let alone figure out how to stop Lucifer if and when we do arrive.
We have to try.
Luce answered without thinking, surprised by her own certainty. Daniel scanned the gathering of angels, the so-called demons, and the Nephilim. His gaze encompassed them all, his family.
We're in this together, then, all of us.
At last, his eyes rested on Luce. And though she couldn't imagine tomorrow, Luce stepped into Daniel's arms and said, Always. This is Justine Eyre. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Passion by Lauren Cade. This program was produced by Dan Musselman. Text copyright 2011 by Tinderbox Books, LLC, and Lauren Cade. Production copyright 2011, Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.